Well, thanks for coming back. I know your bellies are full, and I just have one request of you. If you're feeling like you're going to fall asleep, instead of leaning sideways, lean forward. That way, as you go, I'll think you're nodding in agreement. So if you could do that for me, remember forward, not sideways. Again, my name's Case Visser. I'm a missionary bush airplane pilot. So bush means, you know, out in the bush, out back, no infrastructure. Where you'd say is there's a runway. So I like to fly where there's dirt and grass and trees on both sides, or even better, you know, if there's a river or a lake. Sorry, I'm daydreaming again. I'm back. So that's what I do. The reason I'm explaining that to you is we put missionary in front of that because everywhere we go, we are there on a mission for Christ. We're trying to serve God, be His hands and feet as we go to Papua New Guinea. And realistically, if God took the bush airplane pilot away from me, we'd just be happy to be missionaries where we can go. And there's that song from when we were kids, be a missionary wherever you are, and that's what we're aiming for. The other goal of that is to, please forgive my lack of sermon notes. I'm just a bush airplane guy. I am not a preacher. You notice they moved me down from the pulpit to the floor down here. There might have been a reason for that. So as I was preparing to share with you, I had a dilemma this morning. I sat down to write, well, not this morning, but I sat down to write a good sermon. And I'm going through some outlines, and I quickly realized it's going to be hard to write a good sermon when I'm not a good preacher. So you go, oh, man, what am I going to share? So what I decided, though, is I don't want to preach at you guys anyway, especially everybody that came back for the third service on a Sunday. You guys don't need to be preached at. So I want to share with you today. It's my prayer that you'll listen in that way. When you listen to me, you'll hear what I'm sharing, and you'll take the meat and leave the bones, as we like to say. I pray that you'll be motivated and empowered to be the light in the world. The theme is send the light. So that's both sending it out and being the light yourself, because He is worthy and He is worth it. So after much hemming and hawing, I don't know if you guys use that around here. That's West Michigan Dutch Hollander for agonizing over what to do. So after much hemming and hawing, I felt God was leading me to go through the six ways that we work at Samaritan Aviation. So we're going to look at the six ways that we work in Samaritan Aviation. We're going to ask kind of two questions. One is it biblical? And two, where should we be doing these things? So the first way we work at Samaritan Aviation is through our life flights. If you weren't here last night for us sharing, unfortunately, I don't have it up on the PowerPoint, and you'll just have to go to our Facebook page or website to get the inside scoop. Come see us at the table. But our life flights are where we help people, and we provide hope and access to the remote Sepik River area of Papua New Guinea. There's about 250,000 people that live between 1 and 5 days away from the only hospital in that whole area. So our float planes go out, I fly them out, and we cut that 1 to 5 days from the hospital to an hour flight to bring them back to the hospital. So we're saving people's lives that if Samaritan Aviation wasn't there, a lot of them would just plain die because they can't get to that only hospital. So the question we're going to ask today, right, number one, is it biblical? So Jesus was teaching, I got a clicker. 1, 2, perfect. Jesus was teaching in Luke 10, 25 through 28, and he said, "And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' He said to him, 'What is written in the law? How do you read it?' And he answered, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.' And he said to him, 'You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live.' So the young lawyer asked a very good question, right? It sounds a bit selfish to us because we've heard this story. We like to call it the story of the good Samaritan. See, I'm going to try to keep you awake a little bit. A little interaction. If I see somebody nodding off, we might ask you directly. Watching you guys. So the good Samaritan, I mean Samaritan Aviation, we got to use this story, right? So we call it the good Samaritan. Well, before we know the good Samaritan story, we might not be real familiar with, well, who should we love, right? This is the story in the Bible where Jesus does a real clear teaching on who we love. And hopefully we've heard this story in church before. But before Jesus taught it, we didn't know it necessarily. So we're going to look at the story pretty close. It picks up in verse 28. Oh, look at that. I didn't put the verses on there. All right, I think that's where we're at. But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "Well, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" he said. "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." So we would like to ask that question. So who was the neighbor? It wasn't his next door neighbor. It wasn't his friend. It wasn't the church member. It wasn't the fellow countryman. Who was the neighbor? Actually, when we read that story and we read what Jesus asked him, the young ruler said, "Who is my neighbor?" right? Jesus tells this story, and let's read carefully what Jesus changed the question to. He changed it from "Who is my neighbor?" to "Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" Kind of struck me when I read that. The men in the story became neighbors when the Samaritan helped. Let that soak in for a minute, right? The Samaritan saw a need, and he acted. In doing so, he became that man's neighbor. Although the priest and the Levite were originally relationally closer to this Jew, right? Geographically, they probably lived closer to him. But it was the Samaritan who, as Jesus and the young ruler said, it was the Samaritan that became the man's neighbor when he helped him. Back at verse 27, the lawyer's question was, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus wasn't very helpful. He didn't answer. He said, "Anyone you help is your neighbor." So those who come in contact with us that we're able to help and we help them, we are being a neighbor to that person. What we hear is, everybody is your neighbor. So that's kind of daunting, right? Because now we go back to the original verse and we go, "Love the Lord your God with all your soul, all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And oh no, the neighbor part is now everybody. It's everybody that's in need that I can step into that situation and help them. Oh man. So what do you want me to make my neighbor today, this week, this year, is hopefully what we're asking God, right? For me and my family, those prayers were answered with God saying, "The people of Papua New Guinea who don't have access to the hospital or medical care, I want you to go, Vissers, and I want you to make those people your neighbor and care for them." So Luke 10:37 ends, "You go and do likewise." So that was question number one. Is it biblical for us to take these float planes, pick up people, and bring them back to the hospital? If you look at this story, I mean, we live out the story of the Good Samaritan as Samaritan Aviation. We're literally saving people's life, bringing them back to the hospital, and caring for them. So I feel pretty good about our ministry going, okay, it's biblical. So if I go to the question number two that we're going to answer about the six ways we serve is, what about here in Michigan, in eastern Michigan specifically even? So here's a question for you. Where would you go and do likewise? Be more direct obedience to Jesus' command to the lawyer. Is it me getting in an airplane and going all the way to Papua New Guinea? Or is it you guys, as you live your life, looking around for those that are in need or need help or a way that you can be a good neighbor to them? Which one is actually a more direct obedience to Jesus' question? And as you kind of think about that for a minute, you go, you know, I think if I look around and it's the people I run across on my daily life, on my way to work, on my way home, maybe it's at church, you guys would actually be more a direct answer to that question of go and do likewise than I am. Because the Samaritan guy apparently was just traveling along and he came across a guy, right? I'm going halfway across the world. So think about that one when you're thinking about the story of the Good Samaritan. It's the people that you run by, brush shoulders with, and keep your eyes open to see who you can be a good neighbor to. All right, we're moving good time-wise. I think I'm going to be great. This is my first time going through this, my first missions conference, so I'm a little nervous. I got a dad joke in the end of this. My wife said I shouldn't do, and I'm just pointing that out, so I'm not so nervous about it. So the second way, and I'm emphasizing way because it's part of the dad joke at the end. The second way that we work at Samaritan Aviation is hospital ministry. So when we help people with our float planes at Samaritan Aviation, we save their lives by reducing that several-day trip down to a one-hour flight. And then there's two kind of ways of looking at the next gift we give them, because we go into the hospital and we help care for them. Not the medical physical needs, but we help care for, do they have food? Do they have clothing? Do they have laundry service? Do they need somebody to talk to? And actually, from the patient's perspective, the bigger help that we give them is not the airplane ride. It's once they get to the hospital. As a pilot, I'll spend about an hour with each of these patients. I'm going to pick them up, put them in the plane, fly them back to WEWAC, put them in the little ambulance for the 1 mile drive, 1 minute drive, and then they're into the hospital. And if I'm involved with the hospital care, it'll be me. But other than that, there's a good chance it'll be one of our other staff members. But once they get to the hospital and get treated, they might be there for a day to weeks to months as they recover. And our team goes in and just calls on them, just like if one of you guys got sick. I'm hoping, and I trust, knowing that you guys have good relationships with each other, I'm hoping you guys would go into the hospital to say, hey, how can I encourage you? Let me bring you flowers. Let me bring you a card. That's what we do at Samaritan Aviation once they're in the hospital. So we'll actually spend more time with the people in the hospital than on the plane. But the other part is we help save their life on the plane. Back in the hospital, now we have time to talk to them about spiritual matters. So we can save their physical life on the plane, but often what happens is back at the hospital, we can help save their spiritual life, which is an even bigger gift. So that's one thing that excites us about Samaritan Aviation. I'm going to flip to my next slide, is James 1:27. And there's two verses that kind of scream at me when we're asking these questions. Is it biblical, and where should we do it? So this hospital care, James 1:27 says, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit the orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. That seems pretty clear about visiting our people in the hospital. You go, okay, it's biblical. Matthew 25:34-40 is a little longer. And this one, you guys already studied this one. Should I just skip it? Okay, we're not skipping it. So he was preaching this morning. I'm like, he took my Bible passage. Man, it'll be good repeat. Repetition's the mother of learning, I guess. So Matthew 25:34-40 says Jesus is telling what the entry to heaven will be like, right? And then the king will say to those at his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer and say to him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. So since we already read it twice and had it this morning, I'm not even going to give any explanation there. When we're visiting people in the hospital, when we're visiting people in need, it's clearly biblical that what we're doing in Papua New Guinea is following God's word. So question two, should we be doing it here in Eastern Michigan? We're in Eastern Michigan. The answer is yes, we should, right? And we're not going to go into that explanation, but when we're doing that kind of stuff, visiting people, we're doing it for God's glory and unto Him. All right, the third way. The third way we work at Samaritan Aviation is medicine delivery. And I'm actually going to tie in the fourth way as well, because it's nap time, and they said I have like 20 to 30 minutes, not an hour. So the third way is medicine delivery. The fourth way is disaster relief. So remember the Sepik River, it's 700 miles long, about 5 days of travel to get from the one end to the hospital. Samaritan Aviation has the only transportation that is fast, safe, and efficient for that river region. At Samaritan Aviation, we deliver thousands of pounds of medicine and medical supplies to over 40 remote aid posts up and down that river system. We also respond with information gathering and supply delivery flights when natural disasters like floods and volcanoes occur. These flights are good stewardship of our airplane and the relationships with the government. So we help in a way that we're uniquely capable of doing. Putting medical supplies in a canoe for a several-day journey down the river in a tropical environment where you have rainstorms every afternoon, not a great way to steward those resources and get the medicines and stuff out to these remote aid posts. But put them in an airplane where they show up every time in an hour undamaged is a great stewardship for the resources we have. So the Bible passage I have for this one when we ask the question, is it biblical, is 1 Peter 4:10. 1 Peter 4:10 says, "As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied gifts." So we look at what we have at Samaritan Aviation and we say, hey, our primary focus is hope and access to the people there that are having life-threatening situations that are dying. But would we be being good stewards of both the airplane but also our good relationship with the government if we didn't help out in other ways that were clearly ways that we can help and work well that they don't have? And we say, you know what? We're doing a good job of being stewards of what we have. So we're happy with Samaritan Aviation being biblically sound on those points. So question two, are you guys going to be doing medicine delivery and disaster relief here? And all of a sudden you start going, oh, man. And I was told not to bring up the river situation, so I won't bring that one up. So we'll ignore that and say, likely not. You're probably not going to be in a situation where there's a natural disaster and they're asking you to jump in your truck and bring supplies or bring people. They're probably not going to call you up and say, hey, I got 1,000 pounds of medicine. Can you bring it over to the hospital? That's probably not going to happen, right? So I'm stuck in a spot going, man, how do I encourage the people of Beaverton to do this? And I go, wait a minute. What we're actually encouraged to do is use our resources, right? You guys aren't flying airplanes. You're not pilots. But when you look at your life, what God has gifted you with, I'm sure you'll find, and if you have eyes open to see what God's doing, I'm sure you'll find times where you say, hey, God has really gifted me in a certain area, and I can use that for His glory. You're probably doing it already since you're at 1:30 Sunday afternoon time, and you guys hopefully are looking with eyes open, but that's how you can do that. I'm going to read the verse one more time just to let it sink in. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. I love that word varied in there because it kind of shouts at you and it says, we're not all the same. All right, fourth way. Yeah, we're doing good, man. I'm like halfway through. You guys are going to get home on time. The fourth way we work at Samaritan Aviation is through trauma healing training. It's a bunch of words that basically talk about a teaching program we have and have developed and is still developing called trauma healing training. A little background with Samaritan Aviation, about 40% of those life flights we do are pregnancy related. So you either have premature babies or breech births or mothers that have retained placenta. And we don't need to go into the medical details, but it's a lot of pregnancy-related stuff. So additional flights, unfortunately, involve stuff like rape and other physical abuse. Sometimes it's a mother who's in a serious life-threatening health trauma. Sometimes it's an issue with the baby. Sometimes it's both. Well, at Samaritan Aviation, we put on a training where some of our other organization partners help us, and we train the rural health workers. So those 40-plus outposts have, you know, maybe a nurse or maybe a midwife that staffs those outposts. It's a government worker, and they're dealing with some of the worst things in the world that people have to see, and they're dealing with them with very few resources, right? In America, we hear PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and we kind of get an idea that when you see and you experience traumatic things, it kind of messes with you, and it's hard on your brain and your psyche. So we go out there, and we teach the workers that even when bad things happen, and I'm going to boil this down into just kind of a couple statements, is even when bad things happen in this world, God loves them, God values life, God values babies, God values women, God values not only their physical health, but also their emotional, mental, and spiritual health. So we go out and either at the clinics or the last one we did, we actually flew 22 of those midwife-type people and healthcare workers into town, and it's a biblical, spiritual-based training, both to help them deal with it physically. We gave them some medical supplies, but also spiritually. How do we deal with these kind of heavy, weighty issues from a spiritual perspective? The next Bible passage is pretty weighty and heavy as well. So some of you pastors or missionaries will appreciate this one and chewing on it. Some of you other people that love to study the Bible and dig in and look at a passage for a week at a time might like this one. If you're the kind of person that likes the easy fluff ones where you're like, yeah, I get that, we'll catch you on the next point. So Ephesians 3:14 through 19 says, "For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God." Okay, if you guys are starting school, do you guys start school yet? Keeping you awake, yeah. So if you can tell me how many sentences are in there in a second or two, I'll come back to you. So think about that one. Look at it. Tell me how many sentences is that whole thing. So Paul uses long sentences. And the actual point of this whole, I called it a paragraph, I don't want to give my hand away, is that the point is that you may comprehend and know the love of Christ, that you may be filled with the fullness of God. Did you get an answer yet? No, that's one sentence. If I'm doing my math right, this Paul fella, he really knows how to write a sentence. They're long. That's why you get lost. You got to dig in. You got to study this one. And that's kind of how I tied it to our fifth way that we work, the trauma healing training. To try to explain it real fast, usually we just don't get it. But if you sit down and think about, we're training the local workers at the 40-plus aid posts how to deal with stuff like attempted abortions or moms losing their babies or women that are being abused by their family and husbands. How do we deal with that from a biblical perspective? And you realize the impact that these workers are going to have on their communities because they can be taught to look at these evil, bad things from God's light and counsel the people through it. It's deep, and it's worth mentioning and thinking about for a long time. So, number one, yes, our trauma healing training, it's biblical. We're teaching them that God loves them, that they may be filled with all the fullness of God. Question two, should we teach God's love here in Michigan? Because that's basically what we're doing with that, is we're teaching God's love even through bad situations. And of course we could, right? From the children through the adults, that's a big part of what we're doing here at church. We do Sunday school, youth programs, Awana. I love seeing the sign out front. My wife was the Sparks director for a couple years while I was the TNT director at our church the last couple years, which was kind of fun because then we'd, you know, the commander would kind of come talk to us and we'd be like, well, you can't tell us too much because we're both your directors. So, but that was fun. We love Awana. We love teaching people so that they can handle the Word of God well. And in Michigan here, obviously, we should be teaching about God's love, and we should be teaching that even though we go through hard times often, we can still grab on to God's love for us and His plan through us through those hard times. All right, the sixth way that we work at Samaritan Aviation, we call community outreach. Community outreach is simply this. We teach when we have the chance. So we preach when we have the opportunity. We serve in ways we're uniquely gifted, like bringing us to rural locations. We have ultrasound equipment. So we might go out to a mother that's having a pregnancy, and we'll bring a mobile ultrasound piece of equipment out and help her see, yep, this is what's going on with your baby. Here's what that's going to mean for you. Well, you can imagine we're out in the middle of nowhere, basically. We fly an airplane in. We don't show up and have just that mother there. You land an airplane out on the river in Papua New Guinea, and people come. They gather around. We take those opportunities to preach and to teach and to talk to them. We talk to them about, you know, we got lessons about God strengthening us and how we can mount up on wings as eagles if we trust in Him. And we point to the airplane and we explain flight even sometimes. So all these community outreach things we do just as a way to continue to teach and preach God's love. Matthew 5:14 through 16 says, "You are the light of the world." Tied in with our theme, right? Send the light. "A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." Our family's been called to Papua New Guinea to be the light. You can clearly see from this passage that you're called to be a light no matter where you are. It doesn't say the missionaries are the light of the world. It doesn't say the pastors are the light of the world. It's everybody, right? You are the light of the world. So are we called to Papua New Guinea to work with Samaritan Aviation and fly? Sorry, are we all? I missed a sentence. First time in church. I'm going to do this every once in a while. Are we all called to Papua New Guinea to work with Samaritan Aviation and fly float planes? No, right? I know many, many, many great Christians who are following God wholeheartedly. As we're meeting new people and forming a team to send our family over to Papua New Guinea, I'm impressed more and more each week, actually, by just how many people God has on His team. God's people are amazing. And I think God's amazingness, I looked it up, it's a word. I think God's amazingness rubs off on people when they're close to God. I have met thousands of solid Christ followers in the past year, and you know what? Only four of them are missionary pilots in Papua New Guinea. Only four of them. The rest of them are just like you guys. They are living their life, doing their best to follow God wherever God leads them. There's thousands of amazing stories of faith, love, and service, and they all look different. Do you know what's the same with all these people, though? What's the same is they wake up each day, they look around, and they say, "God, what do you have for me today? What do you want me to do today?" So, in closing, I have one last way that we serve at Samaritan Aviation. You might think this is off topic, but I assure you it's not. It's actually Sabbath. So I ask you guys a question. Do you guys observe a Sabbath? There have been whole books and college courses devoted to this, right? I'm not going to be able to cover it in 3 minutes. But I'm going to take 3 minutes and kind of explain the Sabbath principle. I'm going to lean pretty heavily on Mark 2:27, where Jesus was speaking and He said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." Exodus 29 says this. Actually, I changed it. I'm not going to give you the slide yet. This was my dad joke that Jen said I can't do because it might be heresy. So I changed a word, and I'm telling you ahead of time, just so you don't stone me or something. I'm going to read it, see if you can figure out which word I changed. Here we go, ready? Exodus 20, verse 9. 6 ways you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh way is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. Did you guys catch that? Sorry, dad joke. You got it? Yeah. I changed. Okay, I'll give you it. It really says 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Yeah, nobody laughed. She was right. Next week, when you think about it, just put that one in your pocket. Pull it back out. Oh, 6 ways you shall labor. That's funny. I'm hoping that's what happens. All right. So the Sabbath principle is not a day of rules to live by, but it's a day of rest to refresh us, right? A day to put aside the daily grind, the worries, a day to enjoy God. If you're not practicing a Sabbath, you're missing out, my friend. You are missing out. As Samaritan Aviation, as an organization, we do our best to observe a Sabbath day of rest. I currently take my Sabbath, for instance, on Friday at 3 p.m. to Saturday at 3 p.m. I don't do it on Sunday anymore because, let's face it, this is kind of my job now. For the next 6 months, it's networking, it's team building, it's sharing in churches. That's my job. It's fun. I enjoy it, but it's not very restful. So I do mine from Friday at 3 to Saturday at 3. We're not, like, really legalistic about it, though. For instance, if I have a meeting on Friday night from 3 to 10 p.m., I don't go, oh, man, I broke my Sabbath. I'll often just go, oh, well, I'll shift my Sabbath till Saturday at 10 p.m. We do stuff like that because back to that Matthew section. Is it Matthew? I'll just go on here. Mark, and he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. One of the things I enjoy about Sabbath is the time to sit and reflect. I reflect on my life, and I see if it's in line with God's will for me. I look at what I'm doing, and I say, hey, is this fitting God's given instructions? I suggest that you guys, as you think about how you rest and celebrate your Sabbath, that you inspect your life also. It's so easy to get deep into the tasks, right? We all have a work list that's longer than we have time to get done. And there's a schedule, there's the pulls, there's the victories of life that can actually stop us from having a Sabbath as well. But step back and see, is what I'm doing each day aligned with God? And I know one thing, if you're not doing your life aligned with God, what you're doing is not worth the effort. So that's what I had. Thanks for letting me share today. I did throw in a blessing at the end. I always like this one because it tells us about God's love for us. It says, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And with that, I say, let's send the light.